I had just had a baby the September 9th. I was supposed to give birth on October 20th, and my water broke early in the middle of my brother's Shabbat Chatan. So I had a 6-week-old who was basically just almost term, as in he was still very much a preemie baby. We decided to be home for that chag. We had just come home on Yom Kippur, so we were just arriving home, just coming back to normal. We were just waking up in the morning, and suddenly we heard the sirens. We're in Kiryat Gat, so we're pretty down south. We're 25 minutes from Sderot, so we're very, very close. And my husband and I looked at each other, and we're like, "What? What is that? Must be something." Well, maybe we did something. What did we do? So one of our kids was still sleeping. Our eldest son was with us in our room, so we quickly went to the bomb shelter. We took the baby, and we waited it out. But then it was like siren after siren after siren, and we couldn't get out of the bomb shelter. So we tried to play with the kids and try and take their minds off of the noises and the. It was really loud booms because we're very close. And at some point, I realized that it wasn't going to let up. So I tried to bring in like cereal and milk and bowls for the kids so they could eat. I was still pumping for my baby, so I found myself like moving my pump into the bomb shelter so that I could still pump for him so he could eat. So it was very, very stressful first few hours. There was a couple hours of a break. I remember that we went out to the balcony to see what was happening, and we didn't see anybody in the street, so we tried to understand like what was happening. And around 10, 11, my mom called me and Zeev's brother called him, and people started calling us. So we understood that this was something that was maybe a bit bigger than just a few rockets. And Steve turned on his phone, and I remember him just turning white and starting to cry and like being very, very overwhelmed and upset. And he just said, like, you don't even believe what's happening. You can't believe what's happening. And it was, I just couldn't believe what he was telling me. We ended up actually seeing who needed help in the building. A lot of people didn't know how to close their bomb shelter window. So Zeev went and helped a bunch of people, and he has a gun. So he was, terrified that they were going to come to Kiryat Gat. We're like the next city over past Sderot and Ofakim. We're not very far from those places. And we just invited people into our homes. So we basically had, I don't know, maybe five families with us throughout that day. Some we didn't know, some we did know, who just like brought their food with them, and the kids played together. Everyone was very nervous, very stressed, but we basically got through the day together. By the end of that day, we just sort of had a small vision of what was happening, but it was a very, very hard day. And through all that, also to have the baby with us was very stressful because I just didn't know what was going to happen. So that was October 7th for us. So everyone in our immediate families live here. Steve's family lives in Petah Tikva. My family lives in Jerusalem. So everyone lives in Israel. And Zeev didn't go into Miluim that day. Zeev only went into Miluim. Zeev is my husband. Sorry. He went in only 2 weeks later. They didn't call him up straight away. He hadn't done reserve duty for a couple of years. For the first few days after October 7th, he called to say if they needed him and if they wanted him, and he really wanted to go. And they said that they don't need him right now. We sort of made the decision together that his family clearly needs him more, and the army doesn't need him so much now, and it's okay, and he'll be with us. At this point, the Brit was planned for October 10th, so that didn't happen either. We were supposed to have this big Seudat Hodaya, because which is like a party to rejoice the fact that he was okay and the baby, was fine. And it ended up being like at 6 in the morning at shul with like four people because no one wanted to come. Everyone was so scared. So there was no kindergarten or school for the kids. So we stayed home for a couple of days, and then we decided we were just really scared. Everyone had their shades down. No one was going out of their house in Kiryat Gat. There was all these rumors going around that there were a lot of people that came from Gaza and were like hiding in Kiryat Gat, and they were going to try and do stuff. And so we were really scared. So we decided we're going to pack up. So we moved to his parents' house for 2 weeks. They had their cousins there, but there were a lot of sirens. They live in Petah Tikva, and there were a lot of sirens in that area. So it wasn't easy. The kids slept in the bomb shelter every night with Zeev, and I slept upstairs with the baby. And my mother-in-law helped me a lot just throughout the night with the baby, with the pumping, with all that stuff. And then towards the end of those 2 weeks, Zeev got a call, and they said, we need extra tank officers. Zeev was a tank officer in his army service, and they said that they need more, and if he's willing to come. I remember he was really scared at the beginning. Like, it caught him off guard because he had already come to this conclusion, okay, I'm gonna keep working remotely and be with my family, and that's my job for this time. And he was really shooken up. He said, you know, this is real war and I'm going to go in. And should I go and should I not go? I have such a little baby. And it was very clear to both of us that it was a yes, and that this is a part of history. And Zeev always says this since he's been injured, is like, what side of history do you want to be on? And it was very clear to us that this is where he's supposed to be. This is where he's meant to be. And I totally believe in this. And I told him, I'm not going to be the one to tell you to stay. So we moved to Jerusalem to my parents. And I put my kids in Gan in Jerusalem, in kindergarten with their cousins, because my sister lives in Jerusalem. I wanted them to have some kind of stability. I didn't know how long he was going to be gone for, and I didn't know if I was going to be able to go back home with three kids. About 3 days later, Zeev left. He left on a Thursday. And for some reason, I wasn't at all nervous. I just sort of felt like, okay, he's going to go and it's going to be okay. And I don't know if I was just overwhelmed by the thought that he was going and the baby, but I felt very okay. I wasn't. Also, he didn't make it clear that he was going to be, have some big job, or if it was going to be, he was going to go in. It wasn't clear. So he had 3 days of training, which was over the weekend. And then he went into Gaza that following Sunday. So he left Thursday, and Sunday he was already in. And he went in and out. So it was very, every time he would go in and he would come out after a few hours, and he would just text me, I'm out or I'm in, just code words of letting me know that he was okay. And that Shabbat, as in a week from when he went in, I went to his parents for Shabbat. They really wanted to be with the kids and they really missed us, and they asked if we would come. So I brought all three kids there. And I didn't hear from him for a couple of hours. And then my sister told me that she has a gift to give me from Zeev that he sent her to buy for me before Shabbat. He sent her to buy me a pair of earrings, and he wrote me a little letter, and my sister gave it to me before Shabbat. It was really sweet. And on Friday, we got to his parents' house, and I remember that we were very nervous before Shabbat. Is he going to write us? So I left my phone on. And as I was lighting candles, he called me. And he said, I'm okay. It's very crazy here. I heard in his voice that it was very intense, that I had a really crazy day. I'm going to talk to you after Shabbat. I said, do you have time to talk more? He said, no, I'm just telling you Shabbat Shalom, bye. So his mom and I were both very nervous the whole Shabbat and worried about him. I felt for the first time, like I heard fear in his voice. I heard that he was very intense. And then Shabbat day I remember Shabbat just sort of went through, and the kids were very happy with their cousins. And I just sort of tried to keep it together, even though it felt very weird to be at his family's house without him knowing where he was. And Saturday night, I drove back with them to my parents' house, and my brothers had come out. Both my brothers and my brother-in-law have all been in. They just recently got released from reserve duty. They were all in Gaza. So they were home that weekend. I sat with them, and I had my mind was totally somewhere else. Like for a second, I forgot that I was worried and just sort of enjoyed having that moment with my family. And then at 3 a.m, I got the call from the army. I was sleeping with the baby, and I had just gone back to sleep. And then I got a phone call, and I looked at my phone, and it said like 076. I didn't recognize the number. So I answered the phone, and they said, Kantz Wagen al Israel, it's the IDF. So I hung up the phone. I was so shocked. I hung up. So I hung up the phone, and then they called me back, and they said, don't hang up. Are you Dina, Zeev's wife? And I said, yeah, but inside I said, no, no, no. They said, so your husband was seriously injured in Gaza. They're taking him now to the hospital in a helicopter. We're sending a car to come get you. So I remember telling them, like, I have a baby. Like, I was saying really stupid things. And they said, no worries. You can bring your baby with you. Just get dressed, take it easy, slowly, slowly. And we'll wait for you. So I remember just jumping out of bed with the baby and running down the hall to my parents and waking them up, telling them, Zeev's hurt. I don't know what to do. I don't know how to deal. Like, what am I supposed to do? I don't know how bad he's injured. And my parents just had a horrified face. Like, their faces were horrified. Both my parents are American. They don't speak Hebrew that well. I think they just had no idea how to deal with the situation. Thankfully, they very quickly moved into, you know, we got to do this, we got to help you. So my mom held the baby while I got dressed, and she basically walked me through everything. She said, go brush your teeth, go put on your shirt, put the pump in your bag, bring the milk from the fridge, put it in the, I had to put it with the cooler and bring it with me and get the car seat. And I left my two older kids with my parents. And I said, if you can try and wake them up in the morning and just tell them that I had to go to a doctor's appointment and then I'm going to be back, and just try and make not make a big deal out of it, just so that they don't feel like anything's wrong. My mom said, I'll try my best. I remember she said, I'll try my best. So we walked out of the house. It was already like 3:30, 3:45. And they called me again and said, should we tell his parents? It says here that we shouldn't let his parents know until the morning, because he didn't want to wake them in the middle of the night, which is very Zeev. But I said, you know, you gotta tell them. They have, I guess, instructions when they get injured. And he had said that his parents, because he couldn't talk. They said usually they let the injured soldiers talk to their family on the phone to let them know they're okay. And Zeev wasn't conscious. So he couldn't talk to me. So they said, I guess it said there that to not call his parents till the morning. So I said, please call them. They'll be so upset. Like, you have to let them know. And by that time, the soldiers had gotten to the house and they helped me get into the car. They had no idea what was wrong with Zeev. They didn't know how badly he was injured. So nobody was telling me anything. So I sat in the backseat with the baby the whole way. And then basically 20 minutes from the hospital, that he was in Beilinson. So I was coming from Jerusalem to Beilinson, which is in Petah Tikva, about 5 minutes from his parents, and I was there for Shabbat. So I was just a couple of hours come back from there, and now I was going back. So I went to the hospital, and they said that he had gone into a CT scan and that he was just going into surgery. So I said, you know what kind of surgery? Do you know what kind of CT scan? They didn't know anything. So I basically was sitting in the back trying to understand how badly he was injured. Am I going to plan a funeral? Like, I don't know what's going to happen. And I have these three kids and I have this new baby. And I just had this baby maybe seven weeks ago. So I just was like, my mind was all over the place. And I remember saying to myself, like, why am I not bawling? Why am I not crying? Like, I'm just frozen. I was very much in shock. And then I got to the hospital and there were like five soldiers waiting for me. And then I really cried. I was worried they had come to tell me that like he didn't make it or something. I didn't know what they were going to tell me. And they said that he's going to be okay. And then it's like, okay. So somebody took the baby and somebody took the stroller and somebody was holding me. There were like soldiers that were all over me and helping me get there. And then his mom called me and she was crying hysterically. She was like, where is my son? And where are you? And she didn't wait for the car to come get her. She just got in the car and came. So she was just classic Israeli. She just like made her way there. Told her I'm waiting outside the surgery room. So she came with Zeev's father and his brother and sister. He has one brother and one sister. And then the surgeon came out and told us that it was his eyes. So only at, we're talking maybe 4:45, 5 a.m., 5:30. Like that's when we actually had some kind of information of what had actually happened to him. She said it's his eyes. We're trying to save one of his eyes. It doesn't look so good. We're going back in to try and save it. And then we waited for another, I would say maybe it was 5 or 6 hours until they came out again, until the surgery was finished. In the meantime, the news, like it was on the news that there was a reserve duty soldier that had gotten badly injured in tanks, and people were starting to message me. And it was like the news had started to get out. Both my sisters, I have two older sisters, just showed up. Came were with me throughout that whole time. They were amazing because, you know, someone had to tell me, you need to go pump, you need to go drink a sip of water, you need to go to the bathroom. Like I had forgotten that I was, yeah. And then I remember that I was allowed to go in and see him and he looked pretty bad. Basically he had, his tank had, they were trying to find all these openings for tunnels, and a terrorist came out of one of the openings and it was really close to him and shot an RPG at the tank. And because his face was partially outside, it hit his face. The shrapnel hit him in the face. He basically lost his right eye, his left eye. Thank God he can see 100%. His nose needed a lot of stitches. His teeth were broken. His fingers had a lot of shrapnel in them. But there was no brain damage, which is just a huge miracle. And his body is, thank God, full shalem. You know, it was a huge miracle. But of course, the first time seeing him, he was not okay. And he was very, very shooken up. And so he was in the hospital for 2 weeks and then another week of rehab in the hospital where he stayed there. So it was 3 weeks altogether. And then he started day rehab, which is like when he goes twice a week and comes back home. That's what he's still doing today. So when he came out of the hospital, we were still in Jerusalem. I wanted to stay with my parents a bit longer just to see how he was doing and to see if we could handle things on our own. Obviously, there's a lot of recuperating and emotional work that needs to be done after a traumatizing experience like that. So I wanted to make sure that we were really ready to go home. So we stayed at my parents' for about 3 weeks after he was released from the hospital. And then we decided we were ready to go back. So we moved back about a month ago. And it's been good to be home, but it's also very complicated. And it's not the same life there was before, but we're slowly working through it. And the kids are very happy to be in their own space. So that's good. After he got injured, we basically needed someone to fill in the blanks because we had no idea. And Zeev didn't know what happened so much. It was all very blurry. So two of the soldiers that were with him in the tank at the time came over a couple of weeks later and told us basically that Zeev had yelled into the radio. Yeah. So he said, I got hit. And then he lost, he became unconscious. And two of his soldiers just pulled him in. And I think that's basically what saved his life, because if he would have stayed up, then they probably would have kept shooting. And he basically pulled him in. The one of the soldiers, they basically wear gloves that are fireproof. So they don't get glued to their face. So this, so smart and so with it, these soldiers, that they basically pressed on his eyes with these gloves to stop the bleeding, because they knew that it wouldn't stick. And they helped him because he was choking. So they turned him on the side. They did all these things that basically saved his life. Zeev had done a run of, if somebody in the tank gets hurt, what do you do, a couple days before. So they knew exactly how to do. And thank God that they had rehearsed that before. So they were trying to help him stop the bleeding. They pulled back the tank. This is all under fire. And they moved him to a different tank. They basically pulled him into a different tank and moved that tank back because their tank had gotten hit. And they moved the tank back. They were about a couple kilometers into God. They weren't very far. It was something like Zeev said, like 20, 25 minutes till they got back. And then they brought him to where the helicopter was going to be, where the helicopter was landing. So when they pulled him in, Zeev heard them saying, "I think he's dead." And he remembers this very clearly. So he remembers that in his brain, he said, like, if I don't move, they're going to think I died. So he flapped his arms around, and then they realized that he was okay, that he was alive. And one of the commanders just laid on top of him as the helicopter was landing, because said there were rocks and dirt and everything was flying. And he just laid on top of Zeev until the helicopter landed. In the helicopter, they gave him some kind of drugs that were supposed to knock him out. And he had a reverse experience with that. He just said that he remembers himself like dancing and like he was in a trance. They had to mamash hold him down. It was a very, very traumatizing experience. He said that he saw the stars, he saw light, that all he had in front of him was the kids and me. And he said that he touched his ring and he remembered that he was alive. He has all these very, very amazing moments that someone with so much emunah and someone with so much courage can think that way in a time like that. And they did tell me that he couldn't speak. So they said, "You will know where your wife is." And he said, and they said, "Is she in Kiryat Gat?" And he said, he went like this. And they said, "Okay, where is she?" So he started to say in sign language, like Yerushalayim, with his fingers. So they knew where I was. And he told them like the phone number. So he was like 054, that like, as he's totally being. So yeah, the first day the kids woke up, my parents said they didn't even ask where I was. Like, they were just like, okay, they got dressed, they went to Gan. Like, they were like, "Hey, grandma and grandpa are taking us to Gan today." They were fine. I think my parents were very, very worried. They were very, very upset. I asked them not to come. I told them there's no need for them to come the first day, because my sisters had come and his parents were there, and it was very overwhelming. There were a lot of people coming in. There was a lot of soldiers and people from the army coming to talk to me and tell me all these things. And I prefer that they save their energy for my kids. I came back home. I remember, I think it was like 6 or 7 p.m. when I went back to the house to shower, to sleep, and then to come back the next day. And I just didn't know how the days were going to be. I said, okay, this is how it's going to be. I'm going to take a cab from the army every day from the house to be with Zeev and then come back for the kids. And the first couple of days, I really didn't take them or pick them up. I just saw them when they were already in their beds in the evening. And would say a quick hello in the morning and go. And they had a very hard time. It was really hard. The kids, I have a 5.5-year-old and a 2.5-year-old, and both of them were acting out and they were really upset. They would wake up at like 4:30 in the morning. They knew something was up and I had not told them what happened. So I basically told them that I had like a doctor's appointment, and then one day I was going to visit someone and I needed to go early. Like, I just kept trying to make it up as I went along. I also didn't want them to, they had videoed Z when he was in the army. So they had videoed him a lot and video called him. So suddenly they didn't understand why there were so many days that they hadn't spoken to him. And I didn't want them to be scared when they saw his face. His face was full of shrapnel in the beginning and very, very swollen. I didn't want to scare them. So only on the, I think it happened on Sunday, on Thursday, Wednesday or Thursday, I told them that, they told me to be, the social workers and the therapists that were from the army basically told me to be very, very, very clear and very simple. Gaba got a little bit hurt in the army. His face got some boo-boos and he's going to be okay. And he's home with us now, but he needs to get better and not talk about the losing his eye and not talk about his eyesight and not talk about, you know, Gibo being a hero, being in the army, being in a war, like not put that in their mind. And he came home for that Shabbat. So he came to be with us for 24 hours. My daughter was very, very upset when she saw him. She was very upset. She cried a lot. She said, it's not my Abba and I don't want you to look this way. She was very, very upset. It took a while and he wore sunglasses most of that Shabbat so that she wouldn't get upset because he didn't have the glass eye in yet. So it wasn't so easy for the kids. Like, my daughter talks, like she says what she thinks. And my son is much more, he's an introvert. He's very quiet. So he looked at him and he was like, okay. And he didn't make a big deal out of it. He didn't talk about it. I think he had a lot of anger inside because later, it seemed to me like he was very angry and upset, and it was clearly coming from somewhere. So we've been trying to deal with that. I feel like that happened later. Like, the first time he was very okay with him, and once he saw that it was his Abba and his same voice and the same talk, the same banter that they would play around and whatever, so he realized that it was him, and then that was enough for him. I think afterwards it was harder for him to deal with that. And for my daughter, she was very clear. She said, like, okay, she was very upset at the beginning, and then he got his glass eye, and she was like, okay, now you have a new eye, and now you're okay, and now it's all okay. And she just kept saying that over and over and over again to like calm herself down, I guess. I think it was very hard for him. I think it was very, very early, and not much time had passed. He was still very much in trauma. He was traumatized. He was still having nightmares. And for us, it was very weird because he wasn't with us. And then he was coming back. And then we had to explain to the kids that he was going back to be taken care of. And he would come back again the next Shabbat. Like, he wasn't going to be with us for that whole following week. It was very confusing for the kids and very hard for us because, you know, he's there, but he's not there. Not the same. He was very hurt. Everything hurt him very badly. And it definitely didn't feel like he was, you know, I'm going to be able to bathe the kids. I wasn't going to be able to be the father that he was. So it was a very, it wasn't like, didn't feel like we were going back to anything normal at that point. I had a lot of support from family. My parents were taking very good care of me. They were helping me with the kids. They were helping me at bedtime. They were making food for us. My siblings were checking in all the time and coming to visit Zeev and coming to talk to me. I felt very much like a very big hug, and I felt not alone at all. I had a very hard time at night because I was still pumping. And at some point it was like an angel throughout this whole time, but I'm a lactation consultant actually. And my teacher came to visit me at the hospital. And she saw me pumping and she asked me why I was still pumping. And he's 2 months old. And I said, he's a preemie and he gets very weak. And she said, no, he has a tongue tie and a lip tie. Let's get that untied. And she made an appointment for me for the next day with one of the best doctors here. And that was like one of the craziest days, is that I went from Zeev to this clinic and he clipped his tongue and his lip. And she basically made that big transition for me from pumping to nursing, which was a huge relief for me because it's a lot easier to just carry it with you then have to pump all the time. So that was big. And I was very overwhelmed at the amount of people and support, the people that hadn't spoken to me in years, people from high school, people from my major shop, people from the army, that when I was in a soldier, people that hadn't spoken to me in forever were reaching out and sending us gifts and sending us toys for the kids and stuff for me and clothes and money and gift cards and food. Zeev's work sent us like ready-made food. But what amazed me most is that people that weren't in touch with me for, I don't know, like a few years, had sent me like very generous gifts. And for me, that was very overwhelming because I said to myself, like, there's a million other people like me. And there's a bunch of other women out there that their husbands or boyfriends are hurt, or that their husbands have been in service for a really long time and they're alone with their kids. Like, it kind of made me uncomfortable, like the amount that we had received. But in the end, I realized that like people want to do something good. People feel like they're putting some kind of effort in and that they care and they want to show that. And I felt that way throughout this whole time. And when we came back, people were cooking for us for 2.5 weeks. They sent babysitters to help us with the kids in the afternoon. People had given me like aroma cards and all this stuff that I just felt like people really wanted you to know, like they're there for you. They're thinking of you. They want you to feel not alone. So I really felt that very strongly throughout this whole time. So at the moment, Zeev goes into rehab twice a week, Tuesdays and Thursdays. He has physical therapy, occupational therapy, and a psychologist at the Hadassah Har HaTzofim. So he gets a cab every day from the army that takes him there. And then he has one more appointment, but basically the only doctor that makes glass eyes is in Haifa. So Zeev takes the cab to Haifa, been like once every 2 weeks up till now, and his eye is almost ready, his permanent eye. So I think next week is when he goes to get it. And so the days that he's not in, this has been a real transition for him, is for kind of figuring out how he wants to live his life now. I think a lot of people that go through near-death experiences have some kind of realization that he was in high tech before. And now he's saying, you know, I don't want to sit in front of a computer for 9 hours a day with one eye. That's exhausting. I want to make a difference. I want to do other things. I want to be a teacher. Life is definitely different. And also understanding that this is life now and that we have to sort of take it every day as it comes. I'm sort of not sure when I'm going back to work. I've been thinking about it, but the baby's still small and I feel like I haven't really gotten my maternity leave. So I'm taking my time. Different people have said different things, but a lot of people will say, thank God that it's just his eye. The glass eye looks almost exactly like the other eye that was before. He looks totally normal. All these things when you're saying, you know, that's fine that you're not in a certain situation. You don't see what it's like. But for someone to suddenly go and come back with no eye, and right, he has a glass eye, but that means that he has to take it out and put it in every day, which any regular person that's used to having two eyes that they don't have to touch at all, suddenly having to do that all the time, especially if you're a person that's, I always told him, like, there's people that put in contact lenses, no problem. And there's people that it grosses them out. And if you get grossed out, then you have to get used to a new kind of routine. So I think that's been really difficult, and realizing that he's not going to see from that eye ever again. So this changes a lot. If it's driving, which he hasn't gone back to driving yet, he needs a special mirror and he needs to have all this, you know, you need to get your confidence back. And I think that's part of the therapy, is also understanding how to see from one eye the depth and width of what was before. For me, I'm more aware now, but at the beginning, I remember the first time we went out to dinner when we were still at my parents' house and they said, well, watch the kids. And I sat on one side of him and he said, oh, could you sit on the other side? I don't see. These little things that you have to get used to. So his hands, they basically decided to leave the shrapnel in his hands because they said if they take it out, then it could do more damage. So they're leaving it in, and they said he will slowly get used to it. His nose was stitched up and that's slowly healing. And his teeth, they fixed his teeth almost 2 days later. He was at a dentist in the hospital who fixed and filled in where the teeth were broken. He'll get used to it, I think. I don't know if he'll ever be able to like fold his fingers all the way. He sort of says that it's very hard for him. So the day before, he had another rocket was aimed at him and it missed his face like by nothing. It was very, very close. And so he said that was like a huge miracle. And I think that he wasn't in for very long. He was only in for a week and he was in and out. He experienced a lot of intense fighting, I think, because it was the beginning and because they were still popping out everywhere. And they were one of the first people to go in. But I don't know, aside from that experience that he had, where it was very close to him, he hasn't shared so many stories. He did say that in rehab, when he was in the hospital, a lot of people shared their stories with him. And it seemed like a lot of people had a lot of luck. I mean, some people don't, but a lot of people do. And he met a lot of people that the hospital staff asked him to come in and talk to other people that had lost an eye to give them motivation and stuff like that. From the beginning, he's been giving lectures and he has an Instagram page and he's very inspirational. It's Zeev.Halsband. He writes his whole story out there and he's spoken a lot out throughout Instagram, and it's really actually been very therapeutic for him. We've spoken about it a few times. Ziv was much stronger than I at the beginning. He saw immediately, his emunah was very, very strong. And he said, like, thank you, Hashem. And he was very grateful. And it strengthened him a lot. I was in more of a place of, this happened to me. I can't believe this happened. It took me a while to get myself out of that loop of, I'm surviving, period. Like, this is just survival mode. And I think once I got home was the place where I totally fell apart. Once I got home and realized that the house is on me and the kids are on me and my husband and his rehabilitation and everything is on me. And it was the first time that I said, I'm not okay. And, you know, this is a very, very hard experience to go through. And throughout the whole time that I was going through it and going back and forth and I was surrounded by so many people, I guess I felt like, you know, it's all going to be fine. And I just have to survive this and it's going to be okay. And Davka now, when I've been home, I've found it much harder to lift myself back up. I think it's really important to put that out there and say that it's totally normal and okay, because you're surviving, and then you don't have to survive anymore. And then, okay, this is how I'm really feeling. I do very much believe, and I have a lot of faith, and I know that this could have ended so differently. And I thank God so much for the fact that Steve is with us and that he's okay and that he's, you know, today be with us and be a father for these kids. And I have a husband, which is huge. But also with that, I think that it's a huge difference and life is different. It's not the same life. And there's a lot of the things that have changed. And I think it's very important to be in that place and not try to fight it, which I've noticed has been a big challenge for me, is to, you know, say, this is okay. You're allowed to be upset. You're allowed to be disappointed or hurt. It takes time to get back on track with life. I mean, we're still not finished with this war. So, you know, everybody has their own battle to get through as well. At the beginning, he said he would like to go back and he wants to go back. I don't think he would be able to go back as a tank commander with one eye. I think that there was somebody that actually did. It was on the news. And I said to him, look at that guy. And he said, I was very surprised by his response. He said, I promise you that guy is not married and he doesn't have kids. And so I think that he realizes now that if he were to go back, it would be a different job. And I don't think he would take another chance at this point. I think this is after a lot of thought. Again, I'm sure that if there would be a moment where he would need, and I don't know if he would hesitate to say no, he would probably go for it. But at this point right now, I think he's really focused on getting better. There's a nonprofit organization called Achim Lachaim. It's in Kfar Truman, so it's next to Lod. And they have, it's basically, I think, mostly based on American donors. And it's a huge, huge house. It's like a big, big house. And they have a pool and they have a big garden and they have a music room. It's like a really special place for injured soldiers. And they have a Facebook group for the wives and the girlfriends of the injured soldiers. They do events every once in a while. So they had a candlelighting on Hanukkah. They had a VIP cinema movie for the women. And they have concerts all the time. They do a lot of things and a lot of evenings for the women. I haven't taken part yet, but I think it's really, really important. And I really do want to be a part of that. I think it gives so much strength to see other women who are going through the same thing as you, who know what you're going through, who can give insight, who maybe have had the situation on for longer. But I was very moved to see this group and how active it is and how much they give each other strength. So I really am looking forward to being part of that. I think it will be very helpful. I think what I'd mostly like to tell, and I really want to tell this to women if they're going through something similar, or people in general that have someone close to them that has gotten injured, I think that it's very important to know that you're allowed to feel and be upset and be happy and be, you know, in this roller coaster of emotion. It's okay to be there. It's actually very healthy. I think I fought this for the first 2 months. I was just like on the survival mode. Everything is going to be fine. I think that it's very important to take care of things earlier. I'm only now starting therapy. And I think that it's really important to take care of yourself and not lose yourself in all this, because at some point the battery dies for you too. And you need to keep it full. I've really learned to put myself also ahead and make sure that I'm okay. And I think that it's important to talk about your feelings and talk about what you're going through. I'm happy to, if anybody has any questions or wants to hear more or wants to talk, feel free. I have Facebook, I have Instagram, and I'd be happy to talk to anyone. And yeah, I think it's not easy, but I really do think that when you have faith and just believe in the good, which I really do think that when I look back and I say I wouldn't have changed anything. I think that it's, I don't know that I'm not the one that's injured. Yeah. But I do think that it was for the good. I was due October 20th and my husband went in like October 22nd, 23rd, into Milim, into service. And when I look back, it was a miracle that he was born early because he was already 6 weeks old. So we were past the first few weeks. So that was huge. Thank you. And thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.